Still January 4th, 2019. This is our Yoga for Entrepreneurs virtual retreat. This is part three, so we're just coming back from lunch. And I hope you all had a beautiful break. Did you get a chance to take care of yourself, go for a walk, do something that stays in line with what we're doing, or did you get pulled over there? Whatever happened, happened. Right? Did you stay here? Or did you go over there? You stayed here, Sherry. Awesome. Yvonne, you stayed here. Awesome. Energetically. Good. Really good. All right. Here is what we're doing. So just a reminder of where we've been. We started out with a deep dive into Shavasana and hearing from the inside through that practice what the essence of yoga is that is so far beyond what we think of in the West. And one of the ways I think of that, what's emblematic of that whole first piece, is the sun landing on Sheila's face, right? And that moment of deep appreciation, and how we can then what Michelle said, it's not about who we think we are, it's who we think we should be, and getting all caught up in that instead of actually coming to presence, actually coming to who we are. And as we were diving into all the benefits of Shavasana, seeing through that, not final relaxation pose, but corpse pose, something of a glimpse of the larger purpose of yoga and the larger sense of what it is. And I taught, we mentioned Erin Gestage, she'd heard it before, of the 196 yoga sutras, these little sayings about what yoga is that, you know, potentially codified for us some 2000 years ago. Three of them are about the postures, three of them. So it's just one piece of yoga. I taught you about Ashtanga yoga. There are eight limbs. Ashtanga means limbs, eight petals, eight limbs of yoga. One of that is asana. And what we're going to dive into is the first two limbs. That's a piece of what we're going to do this afternoon. So kind of give you a bigger overview of what yoga is. And talk to you about effortless effort as well, and how the practice of the asanas, the postures, is a metaphor. So if I'm too preoccupied to have my knee aligned, then I'm going to end up with future pains. My knee will start to hurt. Can I pay attention? Can I be mindful over there? And it has a rebound effect on our lives. And yoga has a predictive quality to it too, when we can really pay attention to what is very clearly here now. This is a huge skill. I like to point it over to what's really practical over there in our business world, because if we're at a yoga class, for instance, nobody's going to tell us this. Like, how does this relate? Very seldom will we see, how does this relate to our real lives and our real business? And so if I don't take the time to align my knee, my mind is all messed up, and then I'm trying to sit in a strategy session and see what's happening with that person I don't know. If I can still my mind, actually be present, see not that small self that it feels either unworthy or inflates oneself as ego, but see what is more clearly. It has a predictive quality, like in the strategy session that I mentioned with Michelle, where I said, wow, if that and that and that's happening, I bet this would happen. If you saw that in a movie, you would know that's coming. And she's like, oh, that's exactly what's happening right now. So we can see things. We have better vision of ourselves, our own lives, and the lives of those around us. And these are crucial skills at all levels. These are crucial communicative skills. These are crucial life skills that feed into every area of our business. That was part one. Part two, we love that, Yvonne. See, so can we stay present? I'm like, oh my goodness, that's so cool. I'm just over there with Yvonne right now. And if you're not seeing her, she's like having her snack or whatever it is. It's beautiful. Part two was actually doing an asana practice. So can we start to move our bodies in ways that bring health to the body? I spoke a bit about the deep layer level of health that the yoga practice can bring, and particularly Iyengar yoga. I'm an Iyengar yogi. And from, you know, heart, my teacher's cardiac issues, and the cardiologist going, what were you even doing? Like, this doesn't happen. She shouldn't be alive anymore, but she is. She's alive and doing fine. The same thing that killed John Ritter and so many people. Why does that happen? So many, the owner of the yoga studio doing drop over back bends in his early 60s. And it's just the thing about that was, it's just an everyday conversation. So the health of our bodies, the quietness of our minds, and then actually doing the practice and allowing you to just experience that, whatever quiet you brought into the practice or into your lunch hour. So that's a brief review of where we were. We did some more things as well. I can't review it all in a few minutes, but I also taught you shut, right? Shoulders, hips, upside down, three movements of the spine, Shavasana. So if you want to do a 5-minute yoga practice, fit in those things. And I taught it to one of you here a couple of years ago, a 5-minute practice that gives you a balanced practice. Or one of you asked for a 15-minute practice, fit in those different kinds of movements. And we did each of those in our short practice. Taught you also how you can use the everyday things in your space, a necktie or a towel or a blanket hanging around, to help align the body, make space in the body, and do a practice that really will sustain for the long run. Iyengar yogis, it's a very deep practice. It's a very deep training. And I don't like wasting my time, so I want to practice where this will sustain my body and health and mind and spirit for the long run. And Ashtanga yoga, the final end, samadhi, enlightenment, I don't know exactly what that is, but I know we have these moments of being. I know I've experienced that where all else dissipates and I have complete focus and attention and there's a sense of unity, oneness. That word oneness came up, right? What is it? Was that Grace who said that? When the arm dissolves and you feel like you're one with the universe, is just in that simple act of lying in Shavasana. And that we'll see in niyamas and in the broader yoga philosophy that we'll start to study this afternoon. So those are just some of the places we've been. And as was mentioned, that this is, there's more about doing or about being today. There's a lot of doing yesterday, but the two go hand in hand. How am I, if I'm going to call up that person and then I notice what's happening in my mind, I don't want to because of all this and that, but I can see that mind doing that and I can make a change, let that thought go and do the thing anyway. So what we're learning in the high ticket virtual retreat and what we're learning of presence in yoga and how we have those conversations, they go so much hand in hand. I want to do this every year, always from now on. We've never ever done it in this community before. And I think there's no better way to start the year. There's my brief review of where we've been so far today. What I'd like to do now is open it out to, let's go with, let me see, do we want ahas and questions to be separate? Because they're very separate energies. Let's go with either. I'm just going to trust the random. So an aha, something that's opening for you. It might be from reading these two articles. I posted another one for you. I found actually a really good article on the yamas and niyamas. Yvonne, were you able to access it in the end? Did you find it there? Okay, good. So this one on the yamas and niyamas, I don't know if you can see it, but it's posted in the Facebook forum, right? Path to Happiness, 9 Interpretations of Yamas and Niyamas from the Yoga Journal, which is a great source for yoga information, and then online. And then 5 Reasons Why Yoga is a Must for Entrepreneurs, and both of those are posted in the Facebook forum. And hopefully you took a glance at them at the lunch hour. If you didn't, it's not the end of the world. I just mostly wanted you to take care of yourself, keep that quiet energy. So what's opening for you now? Or what questions do you have? I just want to hear from you. What have you paid attention to? What's most resonating for you? What do you remember here? What do you love? What do you have questions about? Let's dive in there. I'm going to empty this space out a little bit because we've been doing a lot. Yeah, Sherry, and then Yvonne.
So I am very present to how relaxed my body is. Maybe it's the absence of some of the stress and tension that I've had as a result of, you know, the time before lunch. It's really quite nice. And just being present in my body.
So this was mentioned this morning too. It's like, what is it to actually inhabit our bodies? What is it actually to be here, actually, really? And So did I understand you correctly, Sherry, that you were feeling an absence of tension, feeling a relaxed state in the body after our asana practice, after our yoga practice?
Yes, it's, you know, I've become accustomed to, you know, certain, you know, tension in my shoulders and upper back and my back, but it's been very pleasant to feel the absence of it. It's a sensation I could become accustomed to.
Yes, love it. And I'm all about let me be drawn to this practice by the carrot, not the stick. Mm-hmm. When I can feel the beautiful, no better way to open our afternoon. Thank you, Sherry. When I can feel that, I can start to want that. That, like, how much more efficient I am, how much better I feel, how much easier I can breathe. When that habitual tension is gone, and it reminds me of when years ago I had some really awful issues with eczema. It was one of the things that was blowing up in my body and my arms and legs, weeping with it. It was horrible. And I went to see it was a herbalist. I was just starting to dip into some alternative method modalities, right? And he asked me, so do you ever get like stomach aches? Like, does your stomach ever bother you? And I'm like, no. And it wasn't until Michelle's smiling, you know, right? And then I thought about it and I went home and I'm like, actually right at that moment, my stomach was in knots, but I was so used to it. I had no idea. And that these two in Eastern forms of thought and non-Western medicine are very related. And when that got cured in my body, the dermatologist wanted me to be on a medication for lifetime. And not dissing the dermatologists or the Western medical people, I had heart surgery when I was a kid. I wouldn't be here to talk to you if it weren't for them, and bless them, right? But I didn't even know that it was happening. I couldn't tell because I was so used to it. Thank you, Sherry. We become accustomed to pain and don't even know it. And then we're trying to get somebody else in a strategy session out of pain. And then the non-convergence of that, right? Doesn't mean that things don't happen in our bodies. Doesn't mean that then something happened. I beat myself up. I don't mean any of that. But that we live with pain that we don't need to live with. And we can be in a much better state than we realize. And it's like the analogy that the herbalist gave me at the time was that it's like an old car that you haven't taken in for checkup for a long time. And so it's been a long time. And then it goes, it's a little bit rustier. It's running, the engine's running a little bit rougher. And you don't even notice it. And you take it in for a tune-up. And it's only after the tune-up you go, oh my goodness, that wasn't normal. But it happened gradually and I didn't notice. And so just one practice of yoga, just a brief and gentle practice, and finding out things that are happening in my body, in my daily life that I don't even know are there, and then the ability to change that. Magnificent, Sherry. Thank you. So I'm so excited to do this day with you too. We haven't ever done this before, and I love to be able to be here like this with you. Thank you, Sherry. Beautiful. And then there was another hand up. Was it Yvonne, or who had the hand up? Yes, Yvonne.
For me, it was, you know, just a reminder of when I do this, I know it's really good for me. And I noticed when we did started off with the shoulders, you know, how tight they were and how quickly that changed with just, you know, like a minor exercise, or that seems, you know, to be very minor. And you kind of go like, okay, well, you raise your arms up in the air and
whatever, right?
But it's, you know, it was just that reminder of, you know, when I go and do it, I, you know, I love it. And I'm very grateful that I did. So, and then also the shot, I add an S at the end. So I do shots because I don't want to exclude the Shavasana.
Yes, Shavasana in the end. I love it. She shuts the door, gives herself some space and time. I love that. Yes, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good reminder for me as well. I just find it nice that I'm at home right now doing this, because I always find that when I go to, you know, off-site, you know, with you or others, then I find it sometimes hard to bring it home. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like when I, you know, when I'm here and I can actually assess the situation on how to position everything and what to, you know, what props to use, whether it's, you know, my bed or a chair or, you know, whatever I have available, but it makes it more real for me.
Oh, love it. Love it. And to have a home practice, whatever that means for you, if you do Shavasana at home, you have a home practice, right? And it can be as simple or as elaborate as you want it to be. And for Iyengar yogis, that's the essence of it. You go to classes, you go to retreats, and you learn stuff for sure. But where it really moves is at home. Because that's where I can be attuned to my own body and my own body, mind, spirit. And what is it that I need in this moment? And the more and more that I practice, the more I can fine tune it. Oh, my back isn't feeling quite right. Well, let me just fix it. You know, and again, I'm not trying to negate that there are real issues that happen and our bodies are in different states and so on. And that if you're in a wheelchair like my teacher was, because she got into a bike accident in her 60s, was it, and broke most of the bones in her body, and she'd done a practice for people with MS and others who can't get out of a wheelchair, and then found herself doing her own practice, right? So I'm not saying there aren't real things that happen to our bodies, but now she's not that anymore, and now she's fine, and again, real things happen, but we can find such a better state when we can bring it home, and a fine attunement that can happen. What is it that I need in body? What is it that my mind needs? What do I need to recalibrate and come to center? And the more years that I practice, the more I can find that and find that quickly and really truly listen in. And when I used to teach at the yoga studio, sometimes I would go in and just say, hey, this was my practice this morning. I just wanted to bring it to you. And those were the most often the ones that people go, can I write that down? Will you tell me which postures we were doing? And I want to go home and do that, because it's highly intuitive and it's very, it happened to be specific for my body, but they found the resonance in the realness of it and the attunement of it. So beautiful notice about establishing that home practice and using what's real around you. You can just do this. Yes. Beautiful. What else? An aha, an opening, a question, Grace.
Unmute. Okay. Oops, sorry. So the Shavasana of what we did first in this morning and then what we did after doing the movement later in the morning, it was completely different. It was completely different. It was so much deeper. It was, it's really hard to describe, but when you had us begin to come out of it, it was like I was deep into the floor. The floor is like up here. If I'm lying flat, right? It's completely in line. It was just the weirdest sensation. So help me out with that. Tell me more about that. What's that?
Beautiful. I'm just happy for you, right? Yeah, but that's really weird, Michelle, and I'm happy for you. So Grace, has this happened to you before? Have you felt this before, maybe in other practices you have, or did this really feel, well, this is really new?
New. It was new.
All right. So you've had multiple kinds of going inward sorts of practices through your life, and then in one Iyengar yoga session, a wholly new experience. I just want to underline that for a moment. Did you all hear that? That's fantastic and extraordinary and not uncommon. So the benefits of Iyengar yoga increase and increase and increase. Iyengar did it for, you know, he taught for over 70 years. And, you know, his Shavasana the first day was not like Shavasana after 70 years, I can only imagine. And we can receive those benefits with the very first time we practice. And I love that. I was excited about that, to put those two Shavasanas beside each other. And I could feel the energy in the room. There was a deep quietness. And again, whether your mind was fluctuating or whatever, variations among different people, but collectively, there was such a beautiful quiet. And that deeply you felt and experienced, Grace. That's so wonderful. And that is the power of the asana practice. That's the power of, so I want you to start with Shavasana. It's the most important pose. It is, it's the hardest pose, but the asana allows it to go deeper. And it's why I start out my day first with breath work. We'll get to that in the next block. Then breath work, Shavasana. Then if I have more time, it's asana practice of the postures, and then breath work, pranayama, and then Shavasana. But and if I get to do more, it goes deeper. And when I can do that, my whole day changes. My whole day changes. And so the thing I would say about that experience, Grace, too, is not to become attached to it. Wow, now I really got it, because that's all ego, right? Ah, next time I'm the best yogi on the planet, right, or whatever. I'm not detecting any of that energy, but we all can fall into that. And I do that too. So just marking that to not have that next experience might be the hardest one. It's just a practice. It's a practice. And but when there's that profound sense of oneness, and it's related to one definition of ahimsa, that nonviolence, non-harming means much more than the words in English, nonviolence and non-harming mean. The word ahimsa, one of the yogic ethical precepts, guidelines we live by, if we're nonviolent and non-harming, we feel that deep oneness with everything around us. Again, it's hard to say the words without it sounding esoteric or weird or funky, or we already know that, but you got to experience that in the body. It's like, wow, I am really actually not separate. And that has a ripple effect that is hard to put into words, even though I've worked with words for over 25 years. I'm sitting across from that person. They say something I don't like. I'm not going to feel separate from them. At this micro level, not in my intellectual being, in this micro level of my cells, I don't feel separate from them. I'm not threatened by what they say. I can say something different, and I can come from a place of deep connection. So I could say much, much more about that experience, but does that resonate at all with your experience, or did it feel different than that? Maybe it felt scary to you. I don't know.
No, it did feel scary. It was that's exactly, what it felt was something very deep. And it sort of makes me curious more than anything else to wonder. So it makes me feel more wonder than anything else as to what might happen the next time.
Yes. The floor kind of disappeared or came, over like up here this time. I wonder. And that's a wonderful way to be with a practice too. I wonder what is going to happen. I'm curious about it. It's like being curious about the breath, curious about how that strategy session is going to go, curious about how that speaking is going to go. It's something that gets cultivated within us as we practice. And so that's a wonderful, wonderful attitude to have about it. It's a great way to live, a great way to be in my books. And to be curious, not to be attached, to be open to the next experience. And maybe that the next time will be just like that and even deeper. Maybe you won't experience that again for a year. Maybe never again. I don't know, right? But to also just cherish that. And to one of my teachers told me, I just cherish the memory. That was really cool. And then I wonder what will happen next. Let it go too. Because we can even cling to good states of being. Now I want, every time I go into Shavasana, I want that again, right? I don't detect that in you. Curiosity, yes. Instead, I wonder what will happen next. And the profound, profound ripple effects for our lives. And in one yoga practice. Yeah. I can't wait till we're together in Mexico too, right? Because we get to be together in person. We get to take this deeper. And this year, for the very first time, we have this behind us too, before heading over into Mexico. So I could not be more excited, because we'll have a deeper understanding and a deeper practice behind us as we head on into Mexico. It's going to be the best ever, I know. Yeah, so great. Thank you. Yummy, yummy, yummy. What else? What else? These are some magnificent things. Are we noticing this? Are you paying attention to this? Did you hear that? Sherry, this tension that's always there that I'm not used to and that's dissipating. Grace, with it. Never happened before, right? And Yvonne's like, wow, I can bring this home. Feels good. What else? No, I think there's one more out there. I'm not afraid of the silence. It's another thing that the Shavasana does for you, right? And the yoga practice as a whole. I was like that at university too, once I had some teaching behind me. And stay in silence for 5 minutes, I don't mind. What else? Sheila?
I went online and looked at upcoming classes at the Iyengar Studio in Victoria because I'm like, I need to do this.
Yay.
Just at the retreat. So yeah, it really, I know it can have a huge effect on my life in so many different ways. So I just want to commit to it and start making it a practice.
Mm. Beautiful. And Sheila, you happen to live in Victoria. Do you remember the story that I told about Shirley French who shattered her knee and then was in Padmasana some months later at 80? She is the founder of the Iyengar Studio in Victoria, and a whole big bunch of Iyengar yogis have grown over the last number of decades in Victoria from that one woman's work. She planted the seeds, many followed, and her beautiful energy is in the Iyengar Yoga Studio. There's other Iyengar studios as well in Victoria, but I think this is called the Iyengar Yoga Studio of Victoria. Some amazing, amazing teachers, and it starts from that foundational energy of Shirley. So enjoy and send me a note when you go. I'd love to hear about it. Really awesome. Anything else? Either comments or questions? Ahas. What's opening for you now? Okay. I want to ask about the article. So did any of you, if you didn't, I'm not attached, doesn't matter to me, but did any of you get a chance to read either of the articles or look through any of them at all? Yeah, okay. So let's hear from, I saw Yvonne, a summary. One of you, Sherry, was that you too? So from something that you learned from any piece of any of those articles, we're going to play with some pieces of them more in this block, but something that you learned, something that was interesting to you, something you noticed, doesn't have to be earth-shattering. What'd you take home? Marie, Yvonne, Sherry, I saw you. I don't know if anybody else. Marie.
It's funny because it's like I read it, but I don't know. What stuck?
Well, and there's good, no problem, because we're going to go back to them.
I think I read it with a mind, and I already know that. So there's lots of benefits to yoga. It makes you feel better. Your life is balanced. You're more optimistic. So why the hell aren't we all doing yoga? That's my point.
I love it, Marie. And so that moment-to-moment awareness, and I do that too, and especially, I guess, as a student, all those years of study, and as I was working on my PhD, and sometimes I'd read, and I would have read, this ever happened to you, I just read 20 pages. Sometimes it's 20 pages, especially if I have long days, right? And I'm like, I don't know anything of what they said. I didn't understand any of that. So radical presence, and then a sense of humor about it. Thank you for that, Marie, for sharing. So it lets everybody else know, okay, it's okay if I'm human, you know? I didn't remember that, but she remembered the basic gist of it. There's more benefits than I remembered. There's more benefits than I knew. And let me see. Sometimes there's more detail there. And we gloss over the details, and Marie's comment allows me to go into that, right? So because my daughter's in neuroscience, I found this article interesting. Here's just the tagline about it, and then neurological benefits. Let me just share this piece with you. Brain cells create ideas. Stress kills brain cells. Stress is not a good idea. The decreasing of stress benefits of yoga are so well documented for that reason alone. And it's put in such a funny way, right? I don't know if you can see it at the top of the page, written in big bold letters, right? And underneath that, neurological benefits. When we practice yoga, the brain rewires itself into a healthier mode automatically, which consequently affects the body likewise. And that's one sentence packed with a whole bunch, because we were hearing some of those effects in the body, the habitual tension that Sherry didn't know was there, the possibility of the body to be connect us with the whole of us around us, a grace experience that so many aspects of the body, right? So the brain rewires itself and it affects the body. So a whole lot packed into just one sentence, and Marie's comments allow me to do that. I was like, oh, wait, there's more here than I noticed. And again, this is not the perfect article about yoga and business, but I thought it had some really great ideas in it and some things that we don't always think about. It's rewiring the brain. Right? And that is the definition of yoga from the Yoga Sutras. The first sutra in the Yoga Sutras is just now begins the practice of yoga. There's more to that. There's like Edwin Bryant spends 5 pages explaining that one line. And I spent a whole week with Judith Lassiter where we spent, that was the focus of our entire week. Now begins, so more to that than I could say. But basically, now begins the practice of yoga. The second sutra says, Chitta Vritti Nirodha, yoga is the stilling of the fluctuations of consciousness. Yoga stops all that mind stuff. And here it is in more scientific language, right? And again, there's many more articles and studies and so on you could find, right? But when we practice yoga, the brain rewires itself into a healthier mode automatically. What kind of brain do I want to bring to my next negotiation? What kind of brain do I want to bring when I'm next talking to my team? How do I want my brain to be wired? Who am I creating? When I'm moving through my life, I'm creating myself. And Michael Gerber, who's written one of the most foundational books in business ever, I would say. It's the one that Sandra Yancey had us read when we entered the SOAR program. He says, you know, what I'm creating when I'm creating my business is myself. Myself is my business. There's a way that he talks about the separation between the two as well. But so who is the self that I'm creating? And yoga goes in there so deeply to construct a self that doesn't suffer so much, to construct a self that's whole, to construct a self that can see what's even happening. And again, easy to say the words, but how do we actually do that, right? Yeah, so beautiful. Thanks, Marie, for bravely and without ego and with humor, just sharing. Wow, I don't remember, but it was something like this. All right. Anything else bursting up, bubbling up that you'd like to share without which we can't go forward? Okay. So let me just take a quick look at my notes here. Oh, there's the thing I was looking for earlier. That's for part 4. Okay. Here we go. That goes over there. That's about pranayama, yoga breath work. All right. I wanted, so in this yoga philosophy for entrepreneurs, in this segment, I wanted to talk to you about, I said that there'd be these little breaks and how I use yoga in my day. Can you feel that the energy is not as high as it sometimes has been in this circle? Because it's a lot of sometimes intellectual material and it's been a day and a half already and there's a lot processing and getting reconstructed in our bodies. This is one of those perfect times. Before we go into that, we can feel the energy level moving down a little bit. So I wanted to have a whole yoga practice, asana practice, before the break so we could feel that. And then I want to, and even so you could bring it home, as Yvonne talked about. And then I wanted us to be able to use it in the way that I use my yoga practice all the time at home. When I feel my energy going down and maybe I've got a long day ahead or maybe I'm about to go into a strategy session or maybe I'm about to be teaching or maybe it's something my daughter needs or whatever it is, and I feel energy like that, I want to bring it up with the yoga. So there are different kinds of postures. Does anybody know if we've worked together before? You might not know if we just did that piece that we did before the break, although I mentioned it very quickly. What kind of posture would I be looking for that might raise the energy, Yvonne?
It's not one that I do, but I know it's handstand first.
Handstand is my favorite one, right? That's one that Sergio was, or one of you was, it was Sergio, wasn't it? You're asking to do. Oops. So much for, I was in the confidential. Sorry about that, Sergio. Hope that wasn't too, I'm very careful about confidentiality. I don't usually blurt out things. That person said that in the, you know, I don't think it's too confidential. So hopefully not, Sergio. Hopefully that wasn't your, you know, secret, you know, secretly wanted to do handstand. Yeah, that's my favorite posture for raising the energy. And there's a great, as you practice more and more and more, I've brought people into headstand that never thought they could do headstand and into handstand that could, you know, I taught that all the time for years. And these poses are more accessible than we think and they take less strength than we think. My teachers in their 70s and 80s practicing handstand all the time. And Margo would say, you know, it's not about strength, it's about alignment. So that can be more accessible, but might not be practicing that yet. But we can practice postures that lead up to that. And everyone here could be doing that. Some of you have done that with me before, down the way, as you build the practice pose by pose. And Iyengar yoga is very good at that too, that we can start with an easier version of the posture and then work our way up. In hot yoga, there are, I've never even practiced hot yoga, but many of my students have that I've taught. And there are just 26 postures that they do, and they do them over and over and over again. It's not my kind. All yoga is good, but it's not my kind. In light on yoga, the kind of Bible of people, often people call it the Bible of yoga. There's over 200 postures. Over 200 postures, and each one has infinite variations. And for my first assessment, I had to master 60 of them and be able to teach them upside down, backwards, forwards, etc. Right? So there are so many postures, and we can lead up to it if we don't know it. So handstand, yes, is one of my favorites. It will both raise the energy, and if you're all up like this, it will bring it down too. It's a really wonderful posture. It will calm you as well. So that's one. What else? That's often, if you see me at a retreat and I need to bring up my own energy because I'm teaching, I'll do a bunch of handstands in between, right? What else could we do? Yeah, Yvonne and then Marie.
I think downward dog is another one.
Well, see, downward dog would be a good choice because it also is, when we learn downward dog, we're not that far. It's a preparatory pose for handstand. And also downward dog, it's said that when we hold downward dog for at least a minute, it restores lost energy. So in a moment, I'm going to suggest that you do downward dog. And then there's another category of poses as well. Marie, other suggestions?
Well, I'm just wondering about inversions in general and maybe like a forward bend or something like that.
Okay, so inversions in general, yeah. Headstand, shoulder stand, they're the king and queen of postures, king and queen of asanas. You get a full practice pretty well just about if you just do headstand and shoulder stand and variations. You might not be doing that yet, but you can do postures that lead up to that. So inversions, yes, could be. And forward bends are calming to the nervous system. I would not put people in forward bends right now because it would put everybody to sleep. So, but if everybody were kind of like this, I would do that. So the postures have different benefits to them. And you know that forward bends are calming to the nervous system. If you see little kids and they're all upset and they're all anxious, they'll pull themselves up like a turtle. Like, you know what I'm saying? They'll kneel on the floor and they'll bundle themselves up in a little ball. Have you seen that? You know what I'm talking about? Erin, you got a little girl, right? You know? So they, when they're all anxious, they naturally put themselves, they curl themselves up into a forward bend. They're calming and they're safe. Back bends. Back bends are energizing. So I mentioned it briefly this morning, but I know there's a lot of information here. Back bends, when we do, for experienced yogis, and we do an entire 2-hour class of back bends, you do it late at night, you'll be up all night. They're like natural 3 espressos, you know, or 10. So then you're going to need forward bends to calm the system again, right? So we can use it to balance whatever we need. So we got 2 really great suggestions, downward dog, right? And we could do inversions as well, but we're not going to do that right now. Well, we're going to use, downward dog is an inversion. I'm not going to put you up into headstand, right? Downward dog. And then back bends. And back bends, we need a warm body to do them well. I just did a little mini back bend for you, but downward dog also warms the body up. So I'm not expecting you to know all of this or memorize all this or need to, what I'm trying to show you with one example. So whatever the energy is, I can recalibrate it very specifically the more and more that I know about yoga. And you'll know so much more after Mexico, and you'll know so much more too as we proceed by the end of the day, right? And you can always ask me questions about it too anytime through the year. So downward dog, do you remember that posture? So let me show that again. We're going to do that, and then I'll bring you into another little back bend. Let me see if I need to unplug this to do that.
Thumbs up if you can hear me. Can you hear me? Thumbs up. I'm seeing you nod. Okay, good. So downward dog. See the slippers I'm usually wearing when I'm teaching you. Downward dog starts on hands and knees. Can you see me? Yes. Okay. Starts on hands and knees. I bring my hands a little bit further forward. Tuck the toes. Press the chest to the thighs. Lift the outer corners of the hips. Heels to the floor. When you come down, you'll come down into forward hero. So here's what we're going to do. That's me modeling it. You can do it. Make sure you're in a place where your hands will not slip and your feet will not slip. You can place the hands like so at the wall. Just press into these two fingers, the thumb and first finger at the wall, if you're on a slippery place. And just if you can't do downward dog, even though it's a forward bend, it will approximate some of the actions of downward dog. Can you still see me? Yes. So you could do Ardha Uttanasana. Those are a couple of suggestions. So you can go into it right now. And when downward dog is held for at least a minute, it restores lost energy. So I'm going to suggest that we do this for the next minute or two. And if you're less experienced, you're going to come in and go out, come in and go out. And if you can't do downward dog because of the location you're in, use your imagination. Maybe you're going to raise your arms over your head again. Maybe you're just going to stand in Tadasana. Do move your body in some way. So be creative, right? So downward dog, in whatever way works for you, always listen to your body more than you listen to my words. Sure, you can step the feet further back, right? So you want a bigger, larger distance between the hands and the feet. That's it. And then everybody bend your knees for a moment and send the outer corners of the hips up to the sky. So open up the armpits, press into the hands, press the chest to the thighs, lift the outer corners of the hips, then start to straighten the legs, and then press the heels to the floor. But the straight legs and the heels to the floor, much less important than that length through the back. Much less important. And if any of this movement is not right for you, you could just be seated in meditation for a minute too. So do something that restores your energy in whatever way works for you, right? And if you're new to the practice, you're coming in and out. And if you are more experienced, you could be holding downward dog this whole time, feeling the breath, staying present. Coming in and out as you need. And Marla, for you, whatever restores your energy, all right? Whatever feels appropriate for you. It could be a meditation. It could be whatever's right for you. Maybe another half minute or so. While you're doing that, I want to get a prop that I'm going to show you. All right, and then slowly coming out of downward dog. Come back to the center just for a minute. Because I want to hear from one or two of you, what have you noticed about your energy? And I'm not attached to the answers, not attached to the results. Maybe this time it works for you, maybe it doesn't. It's just Iyengar yoga is very much about observation as well. What actually did happen? So how are you feeling now compared to how you felt a minute ago? What do you notice? Let's hear from one or two quickly. Briefly. Look at Yvonne's face. You can see her face has changed, right? Sergio too. Well, we couldn't see him earlier, right? So who would like to share just briefly one or two sentences? Can you feel the different energy in the room? One downward dog?
Yeah, it's not my favorite pose. So I always do it, you know, kind of, you know, grumbling.
Oh, hang on. I can't hear you very well without my headphones on. So let me get those on briefly. I'm going to have to take them off again in a minute, but not your favorite pose and still shifted your energy.
Yeah, because I have to laugh about it because it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, even though I don't necessarily like to do it, I know it works.
Yes, right. And it's very much like forearm balance for me. When I learned forearm balance, and you can see it on my old website, Me in Forearm Balance, if you want to see me 10 years ago in forearm balance, go to languageofyoga.com. It's my old website. I haven't taken it down yet, right? It's what I used to do. So I hated forearm balance. It was my least favorite pose. And the owner of the yoga studio, I took his classes all the time, and it was his favorite pose. I hated that. It made us do it over and over and over again. It's one of my favorite postures now. There's something there that the body needs to learn. There's something there that's important. So, and we could see, could y'all see the shift in Yvonne? That was like, it was visible. One downward dog, right? Let's hear from one more of you briefly. Because this is how you incorporate it through your day. You notice the energy and you make a shift. Marie, go ahead.
There's some challenges going on in the home front today, and I've been pretty angry, but what I have found is even with one downward dog, the anger is a little less.
Did you hear that? Right? Who doesn't have stuff swirling around them sometimes in the home front, with friends, with whatever's going on? And then you've got to attend to business, and you have to do it quickly, and you take 1 minute to do downward dog. Do you? Am I finding the words to tell you why I love this practice so very much? A 1 minute downward dog, and this connects with the high ticket virtual retreat. Remember, we're in the middle of the game right now. We're already day one into it, right? February 14th is coming up. We're one day closer, and you've got that person that you're going to, you all have that person you're going to call. And Marie's life, maybe all the stuff is happening at home and there's this anger and she does one downward dog before she makes that phone call. And it can be the difference between that person saying yes and saying no. When it's your ideal client and they really do need that work. Right? I'm not saying somebody who ought not to be doing the work. I mean, somebody that you could really serve. 1 minute of downward dog can make the difference on that call. We can study all the scripts in the world, right, for how to do a sales call and what to do in this scenario and what to do in that scenario. It's also mechanical because it's like absent of a person who's present. It's like it's trying to mimic a person who's actually present and alive and awake. How about we be alive and awake and present, and then we say things that make sense, right? I don't know how to say it other than that. So fantastic. Thank you. Beautiful. Let's hear one more experience real quick because I want this to go cellular. I don't want it to be intellectual information. I want to hear more and more of all the experiences right in this room that are happening in real time in 1 minute and a shift. Yeah, Sherry. Sergio, did you have your hand up? Because I couldn't hear. Did you have your hand up? No? Okay, I thought I saw over there. I didn't want to miss you. So, okay, Sherry, go.
Well, I could barely keep my eyes open before we did that. And now, you know, I feel more settled. I'm alert.
Yes. Yes. You can see it in her face, right? 1 minute. Maybe it was two. I don't know. Of downward dog, right? It took us a while to set up. And you might have only stayed in it less than a minute. 1 minute of downward dog restores lost energy. Adho Mukha Svanasana. These postures are so much more powerful than we know, and certainly than we know in the West. What they do to the mind, body, spirit is absolutely fabulous. So I just thought I saw another note of that. Yes, absolutely fabulous. So I want to show you one more thing. So to raise the energy, and already we have a different energy in the room, but I've not shown, other than students who've come to my home here. I used to have students in my home all the time when our community was much more local. Now almost no one lives in the same city as I do, and that was intentional. First, yes, Yvonne lives in my city. I don't think anybody else does, right? And Shelly does. Shelly lives in she's not here today though. So when people used to come to my home years ago, and so I would show things like this, but I've never shown for a long, long time. I've not shown this, and I've never shown this in this kind of situation before, what I actually do. So in yoga, in Iyengar yoga, we play with all kinds of props. I showed you how we use the strap, and let me see. I don't know if I can tilt this camera so you can see it. So do you see right in front of my couch, there's the bolster, the blankets. Beside that, on this side, I think I'm pointing to it right now, that is, those are yoga blocks, wooden blocks. And I don't know if you can see this tiny blue thing, that's right there. That is an eye bag to cover my eyes in Shavasana. And on right behind, I don't know if you can see it, behind this backbender is some foam blocks. So we use all kinds of props in Iyengar yoga too. We saw one of them, or you might have heard me say that. So Sheila has a bolster and she put it beneath her thighs in Shavasana. If your back is a little bit not feeling quite right, if we lift the legs, then the back is more comfortable. We can do such minute work to do exactly what's right for our mind, body, spirit in that moment. And then when we learn it over here, we can do it for that person in front of us, in that audience, or in that strategy session, etc., right? So what I wanted to show you was my backbender. So I bought this many years ago. Iyengar backbenders come in multiple forms. We have ones that look like lounge chairs, you know, or like beach chairs. They're longer. And I want to show you, I've never shown anybody this other than in a private session, how I use this backbender. Because you can go online if you want. You could go buy one. You don't have to buy one, though. You could use the edge of your bed and do what I'm going to show you, all right? So this is a first ever. I've never shown a class, anyone, anything like this other than in a yoga studio. Here we go.
So when I am about to teach you Thursday mornings, I have probably started my day on this backbender. I don't just start with Shavasana, I start with yoga asana practice as well. And the backbender, I want to raise energy, and maybe especially if I've been up late, or that's how I start my day today. I stayed up a little later again tonight because I was preparing things for you and I just got back from Tucson. I started my day on this backbender because backbends raise energy. So I'm going to show you what it looks like. And then let me see. If you are confident and you've done some yoga with me and you don't have major back or neck issues, you can. We're going to take 2 minutes and you can go try this somewhere in your where you are. If you've got a bed, you could be hanging off the edge of the bed, right? So just over the bed, you'll see how I do it on the backbender. You could just be doing the backbend that I showed you, just this little mini backbend on the chair. I'm not going to give you other variations other than that. But I want to show you this because for some of you, and maybe if you have a yoga practice already, you might want to go online and just buy one of these. This changes my life. This changes my world. I would even go as far to say there's probably some of you who are here today who would not be in this community if I didn't have that backbender. Because maybe we were doing our strategy session when something kept me up late that night or something, and I could be just a little bit more alert, just a little bit more alive, like Sherry saying, the two versions of her, before Downward Dog and after, so that I could be there present with you and hear what you were saying and do my best to hold space for you. So this is what using the backbender looks like.
Yeah, okay. Let's see if you can see. You can still hear me, yes? Okay. That's it. That's it.
We do this in multiple ways in Iyengar yoga. Let me put the headphones on again. We do this over chairs.
I'm at home or I'm in a hotel room. I do this over the edge of a bed. Let me show you. I think you got that. Like if you are lying with your head, not at the pillow side, but the opposite side, and you just inch your way over so that the edge of the bed becomes a space where you can just arch the back over. You can try that if you are confident. If you are less confident, let's just do a little mini backbend like I showed before. All right? So you just play with whichever backbend you want. We'll take 1 or 2 minutes over this. And then it will help you remember to downward dog will raise my energy. Backbends will raise my energy. It's what we needed. And then I'll get back to what I was going to teach you. And I left space for this. Then we'll get to the yoga philosophy pieces. And I think we're going to do just like yesterday. This block is going to be longer. Just need a little extra time here. So especially after Q&A, after lunch. So I'll show you one more variation. You can do whichever variation you want. You can be watching me for a minute, different ways to play, or you could just be going into one, all right? Be gentle. Listen to your body first. Gentle, gentle, gentle.
So if you're in a mood to watch more than play, another variation of a backbend. This is an Iyengar yoga chair. Can you see me? Yes. Okay. This way a bit. Or this.
I can reach the arms around or through, reach the arms over top. So all of these props are right outside my office. My yoga room is directly outside my office. So that anytime I need to, I can lift my energy to be present with the person in front of me. So do one or two little mini back bends. Some of you, the more
advanced among us may have disappeared to try hanging over the bed a little bit. Be gentle with whatever you're trying.
I'm afraid I'll drop on my head.
So if you are afraid of that, my friend, don't do it today. Ask me about it sometime when we're in the same location and I can show you. All right? Only want the confident yogis to try this out. Don't try it out if you're not experienced or it doesn't feel right to you. Grace, lovely. I love it. So this is turning the whole world into a prop. And again, don't do something that doesn't feel right to you. Listen to your body. Sherry's got a standing version. Sherry, tuck the tailbone and really think of lifting the chest. A back bend is more about lifting than going down. You go up more than down and keep the back of the neck really long. So that's for Sherry, but it's for everybody. Back of the neck long. So, you know, those straws that bend one piece at a time instead of in half, that's what your neck should be, long. Good. And then finishing up your back bend. Oh, goodness, I've got not pointed at my head here. There we go. Back into where we are. So coming back into the circle. And then just a couple of words on your experience of this. And it took more time to explain it than it would to actually do it. Do you get it? One little break in your day, a little mini back bend, a little downward dog. Tell me about the back bend experience really briefly, from one or two of you, so I know where your energy is now. And we're almost dissipating the energy by talking about it. Do you get it? Like the benefits of it. And then we start talking about it. I have no other way to teach it. I want you to notice it. So really quickly, just from one person, Erin.
I like them way better than downward dog. I'm with you, Yvonne.
And like how's the, yeah.
Good. I've got some blocks at London Drugs, so I can pull them out really quickly, and it's great.
Yes, and you can lie on blocks. I'll show you how to do that in Mexico. That was Yvonne's least favorite when we began together. It's like, no way you're going to get me on those blocks, Michelle. That looks so bad. That looks so uncomfortable. And now, unless something has changed, she really, really likes, yes, exactly. There's her face. Thank you for the confirmation, Yvonne. Now she loves them. And you can look at, and Erin's energy is different. Can you feel it? Did you notice this shift in it? And then she's going to want to try to look like something, right? But yeah, really good. Okay. So, how you can use yoga. I promise I would do at least one piece of that in this segment as well. In the midst of your day, right when you need it, you need energy, downward dog or back bends, right? Gentle, gentle back bends, nothing radical. If we were going to do like drop over back bends, which we were doing at the last yoga workshop I was at, or things like that, we need a warm body. We need someone who is training us in very specific ways. But these little mini back bends, you can start out right away. Grace, how did that one feel over your chair? Had you done that before? No, so wait, you're muted.
No, I was watching you and trying to like figure out what you were doing, and I didn't know if having my legs up higher would make a difference or not.
Yeah, you were fine. Yeah. How did it feel?
It felt good. It yes. felt like I was like really stretching my back and my neck. It felt good that I was stretching myself.
Yes, and we're so often slouched the other way over, you know, in front of our computers. So this opens the heart center. And when we open the heart center, Father Joe, that Iyengar teacher I told you about, said teaches often that when we open the heart center, we're not just opening our physical heart, we're opening our hearts. In back bends, we open our hearts and thereby the heart of the world. So we're doing so much more than what the simple practice of just a back bend, right? Okay, good. Good, really good, really good. Anything bursting to be said without which we can't go forward? Yes, Sergio.
So how do headstands compare with back bends?
Headstands. So headstand is considered the king of asanas, the king of postures. It has multiple benefits. So back bends are energizing. I find headstands calming to the nervous system. And so they're calming, they're centering, and I think better and more clearly. But if you want the actual benefits of each posture, this gives me an opportunity, your question gives me an opportunity to show you something that I wanted to show you anyway. A couple other books on yoga. There's one that's just called Iyengar Yoga for Beginners. Not bad. It would be okay if you find it. It's not a bad book that to get you started. It has some postures and, you know, their benefits, that kind of thing, right? Gives you a little bit on yoga. But I wouldn't choose this one first. Here is Light on Yoga. This is the one that's like the Bible of yoga. But this one, if you're a yoga teacher, this one is great. And this is the one where I said there's like, you know, 200 postures, right? And Iyengar did this in just a few days. He did in the 60s. Nobody was doing books like this. And sometimes we call these the back of the book postures. At the back of the book, there's all these crazy looking postures, all right? But the front of the book is the easier stuff. And then it gets progressively harder. So I don't know if I can show you. And Shavasana's right at the end. So I don't know. It goes into like stuff like this, right? That gets a little complex. But at the beginning, or, you know, this was what was on my last syllabus. I needed to be able to teach this posture. So a shoulder stand without the arms, right, near lumbar. So not just to practice it, but to know how to teach it. And but at the beginning of the book, right near the beginning of the book, is the one that I just taught you, Vrikshasana, right? So this book, if you want a compendium of yoga, it will tell you some really cool stuff about it, but it's kind of designed, it goes into depth kind of for teachers, and it doesn't give you the detail because you're asking about, well, how does headstand compare to back bends? So again, back bends are energizing. Headstand, the king of asana. If I only owned one book on yoga, I would own this one. If you're not a teacher, Yoga, the Path to Holistic Health. It's really comprehensive. And the definitive illustrated guide by the world's leading yoga teacher, it says. And if I look up, I just happened to flip open, it said Yoga for Stress. Oh, that's really cool too, because I just happened to flip to Yoga for Stress. And there's one of the, you know, we do back bend. We use different benches for back bends. See that? We're just lying over a bench. There's a back bend, right? So there's different kinds of back bends too, depending on which kind we do. Some are more or less energizing. So some we can end a practice with, some we wouldn't. And you don't need to know that level of detail. The only reason I'm telling you that is to know that you can get benefits from the very first day. And then there's a level of detail of self-care. You can take it as deep as you want. And I'm just trying to find the page just very briefly on a Shirshasana, which is headstand. Okay. So 138 to 43, it's got pages and pages on headstand, right? 138. And if you do buy this book, don't be frightened by the precautions. It's made for a North American market of, you know, don't sue me. So the precautions will kind of say, don't ever do this posture, right? Almost. I mean, work with a teacher in your area, but it'll show you how to do it against the wall. It'll show you the different stages of it and, you know, what how to do. Again, work with a teacher if you're going to do things like this. But the benefits, builds stamina, alleviates insomnia, reduces the occurrence of heart palpitations, helps cure halitosis. I didn't remember that. Right? Helps cure halitosis, strengthens the lungs, improves the function of the pituitary and pineal glands, increases the hemoglobin content in the blood, relieves the symptoms of colds, coughs, and tonsillitis, brings relief from digestive and eliminatory problems when practiced in conjunction with shoulder stand. So there are so many benefits. I tell you, I can't even remember all of them, right? We're trained to know these. I don't remember all of them. Some of them I know because I've been taught. Some I have profoundly felt. And there's that long list of benefits. What I know about headstand is there's no posture that I find more centering, more calming, more aligning, that brings a deeper sense of peace and well-being. It's the king of asana for a reason. I guess the only other one that would be kind of like that is Shavasana, corpse pose. Sergio, did it answer? And yes, Sergio, go ahead.
So I do headstands all the time because I travel hundreds of kilometers and I get out of balance. So I do headstands. So I was wondering, how does that compare with doing a handstand? I've never been able to do handstands. I can do headstands without thinking about it.
I would say go ahead and experience it. And when we're together in Mexico, right, we'll dive in and it'll show you. Because sometimes we can get all in our heads about it and what are the benefits and how does it feel? Well, it's just like when the floor disappeared for Grace or came up over her, you know. If you tried to explain that to somebody, we heard your words, but you were the one who experienced it.
Yes.
So same thing, Sergio. I would say experience it because they're different, but I don't even know exactly how to put it into words. I can tell you from a book. I can tell you that, the best thing I can say, and that's what my teacher would say to me all over and over and over again. It's like, Michelle, get out of your head and just go do it. Right? My academic trainer, like, just go do it. Just go do it. Just go do it. And if you don't have the capacity yet or a teacher in your area to learn handstand safely, yeah, absolutely. We can do that in Mexico and you'll tell me how it feels to you. Sound all right, Sergio? I know it's a non-answer answer, but it's the best one I can truly give from an authentic place. Right?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. We are obviously going past 4 o'clock. I think it's going to be just like yesterday. So next iteration, I'm going to say, this block just goes till 4:30 because we need some time to unpack what happened earlier in the day at the beginning of the block. So this is about yoga philosophy and then the how we use yoga during our day in those breaks. So one more piece I wanted to show you about the Yoga Sutras. So remember different versions of the Yoga Sutras. They look like this. They look like this. And there are multiple chapters of the Yoga Sutras. The two that I want to point you to are the first and the second chapter. The first chapter is one of the ways it's sometimes spoken of is that it starts out but for those who are already enlightened and who already get it, here's the stuff you got to know. It's like, well, what about for the rest of us mere mortals, right? What if we don't get it yet? We're not enlightened yet. I don't know, like, where do I start? So then there's chapter 2. And the second pada or second chapter of the Yoga Sutras is really important for us mere mortals because it's kind of backs up and says, okay, well, for those of you who weren't there yet, here's some stuff you can do to actually bring this into your lives. So there's a whole bunch of meaty stuff in chapter 2. So chapter 2 is important. Chapter 1, the second sutra says, you know, yoga is the stilling of the fluctuations of consciousness. It's stopping all that mind stuff. And the yogi said, if you really understood that, you wouldn't even need the rest of anything. Chapter 2 tells us what yoga is. And let me see, do I want to go very deeply into that? But I'll just say this. In chapter 2, that's where we find these 15 words that I'm going to teach you this afternoon, right? And the 15 words are from the yamas and niyamas. Remember, there's 8 limbs of yoga, 8 different petals, the 8 different aspects of yoga, of which the postures are one. The ones that come prior to the postures, yamas and niyamas, those ethical principles. They come from chapter 2 in, oh, goodness, Sherry, you started screen sharing accidentally. So, Sherry, you're sharing yours. We are now seeing Path to Holistic Health in front of us. So what you want to do, I don't even know if I can do it at my end. Let me see. I might be able to stop sharing for you. No, you need to do it at your end, I think. Yes, thank you. And good, you're looking for Path to Holistic Health. Good for you. So I'm glad it wasn't, you know, something that, I don't know, it's really private to you. Must have hit the wrong button. All right. So the second chapter gives us the yamas and niyamas and also the kleshas, the things that bind us, the things that cause suffering. So what I wanted to do, I wanted to do this in a kind of fun way because every one of those yamas and niyamas, there are some that I lean on more, but all of them, I've been working with them for so many years and trying to understand and trying to go deeper with them. And they've really touched every aspect of my life. And I think the best way to do this, I'm going to talk to you briefly. Let me see. Do we want to do the kleshas first? I think we're going to do just a surface level talk about the kleshas. Let me just tell you what they are so that we can do a deeper dive into the yamas and niyamas. Otherwise, it ends up as head knowledge and we won't be able to use it. right? So the kleshas, these are the things that bind us. So the second chapter, it says, here's what yoga is, and here are the things that get in the way. It's beginning right at the beginning of chapter of the second chapter. And the kleshas, the things that bind us, the fetters, avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesa. Y'all got that down, right? Avidya, my translation, not knowing how big I am. We touched on this morning already, and it gets woven through the whole year. You'll hear me use that language. It comes out of the Yoga Sutras. When I don't know who I am, and that sense of oneness, like Grace felt as she's dissolving into the floor, and I don't know how connected I am. The whole opening series, in a way, tries to get at that. Then I'm going to suffer. And it is said that all the other kleshas follow. If I fall into that, all the other causes of suffering are going to go like bang, 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 like this, right? So the first klesha, not knowing how big I am. And then the next klesha follows. Vidya, not knowing how big I am, asmita. And at the beginning of a word means not. So vidya is knowing how big I am. Avidya is not knowing. Avidya, asmita. Asmita is ego. I don't know how big I am. I talked about this morning. So I puff myself up. Saw a lot of that at university, lots of egos, right? I got to look big because I don't really think I'm big. And it causes suffering. The next one, raga. I cling to stuff. And these are related. I need my car, or I need my house, or I need my idea of myself as the best entrepreneur, or the best mom, or the best yogi, or the best whatever it is in your field, the best Feldenkrais practitioner, the best naturopath. I've got to be this thing. And then I hang on to the stuff of that. I can hang on to words and ideas. I can hang on to anything. And as I cling to them, if I hold on to them tightly, I suffer. Avidya, not knowing how big I am, asmita, ego. Raga, I hold on to stuff. For you guys, it may not be cars and homes, and might be, might not be. What are you hanging on to? The idea of yourself as the best daughter or son, or I don't know what. Dvesha is the opposite. Hatred, aversion, pushing stuff away. I only will hang out with you, and I won't hang out with you because when I hang out with you, I'm going to look bad because of whatever, right? It's going to cause suffering, and it comes out of not knowing how big I am. I won't care that I'm hanging out with you or drinking that drink or doing that thing that people are going to judge or whatever, because I don't care. But if I don't know how big I am, then ego kicks in, and then I'm going to cling to stuff, and I'm going to push stuff away. There's a four of the five kleshas. The last one is abhinivesa. I mentioned this morning. Abhinivesa is fear of death clinging to life. It's said to be the deepest root in a sense because we want to survive. But it causes us to suffer when we cling to life. And I learned this from my teacher, Margot Kitchen, many years ago. It often manifests as a fear of change. And this is entrepreneurs, that klesha of abhinivesa, fear of death, clinging to life. I got to hang on to stuff. So I've been trying this approach for 5,000 years, but I'm not going to change it because I'm afraid to change. So I'm trying to think of an example. So if Marie might have been in that, it could have been something else, but it could have been, she's like, I am not going to do that high ticket stuff. There's no way, because I'm not going there, because what I'm doing is writing and only, right? Not wanting to change. There could be an aspect, it might have been something different, but there could have been an aspect of abhinivesa in there. Fear of death, clinging to life, manifesting as fear of change. I'm not going to go to that other place. And Marie, luckily, is so far beyond that and is noticing things as they're happening, and then gets to move into a way more fun place in her life, because as that klesha loosens up, as she finds freedom from it, there's much more freedom and openness in the life, right? So those are the kleshas. We're not going to do a deep dive today, and we go in the letting go series, we go in to a couple of those kleshas a little more deeply. So we're going to leave it at that for today. Let me just hear one thing that you heard for yourself, though, where you can find an application either in your business or your life. When you heard those, it's either something you've seen in yourself or another, or some aspect that you've heard, you haven't thought about it in quite that way before, or reminds you of something important. What have you heard? So I know that something, again, I'm doing some just didactic, I'm just teaching here. I want to know that something landed. What did you hear about these kleshas? Avidya, smita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesa. I don't know who I am. So ego comes up. I cling to stuff. I push stuff away. And I'm afraid to change. Sergio.
I need to be willing to change. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Central to the high ticket virtual retreat. Well, I've never sold high ticket before. I don't know how I'd sell high ticket. It was like one of those clashes was probably active in a couple of years ago when that one person was going like, there's nobody around and I got to do it that long way. And no, but the person's in front waving their hand and have to change. I have to be able to see that. I have to see myself as bigger than I've thought before. The reversal of all those clashes in order to enact the things that we were talking about yesterday. Right. And some of the things that we were doing yesterday were to release some of those kleshas, right? It's okay to go try it out. And you can know all of part two, you could say, has to do with releasing those kleshas. You can know how big you are. Part two is the releasing of that klesha to the best that I knew how to teach it, right? It's one way to look at that, all of part two yesterday. All right, let's hear one more brief brief opening. What did you hear for you so that this becomes practical, not just head knowledge? So not interested if it's just head knowledge. What did you hear? Erin.
Difference between pushing away and letting go. So one can let go and not cling. And sometimes it could, for me, I could confuse that with pushing things away.
I think it was that insight. One of the students in the program a couple of years ago, we were talking about a piece related to this. And the next week she went away and made $1,500. Because she realized, like, that one piece, I can't tell. And again, that's just, you know, very practical applications. I realized at a subtle level, there was maybe somebody that I was pushing away. I thought I was letting go of them, but I'm actually pushing them away. And then I'm starting to push away this person that I'm working with. And when I can see the distinction between those two, when I can find that clarity, this person, maybe it's a person who said, it's, go back to that, you know, objections, said this too much money. So I start pushing them away because then I don't think that I'm very, it happens in strategy session. I don't think I'm very big because that's not worth it. What do you mean I'm not worth it? So ego comes up, right? And then I push them away. You must be wrong. I don't like you. Go away. And then the whole strategy session gets mucked up. Very different to let go. I already know the deep value of my program. I know the work that we do here. I know the amazing people that are involved. I know it in my bones. I know how connected I am. My arms disappear in the floor. I know, right? The depth of knowing. Then somebody says something that could ruffle our feathers. It's like, wow, that's too much money, or whatever the objection is. But that's a common one that people are afraid of. That's too much money. And I don't end up pushing them away. And instead, I can just become, stay with what is, not need to push away, not need to push that thought away in Shavasana, not to need to push that person away when they say that. Instead, I can just pick it up and look at it. Tell me more about that. Because my mind is a neutral slate. It's not pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling, making me tired and making me all caught up in my own stuff instead of able to hear what that other person is saying. Erin, very astute. I taught that very rapidly, and that was a great point. Yes, thank you. There's so much here. We could spend the whole week on this. We could spend a whole week on the kleshas, right? I spent a whole week on just one of the sutras with one of my teachers. Really good. Anything burning to be said without which we can't go forward? Yeah, Marie.
Well, I'm curious now about the energetic differences of these kleshas. And I'm thinking about something for me where the woman I've been co-facilitating some retreats with is no longer working with me. And I went through this sort of grieving thing in November, but part of my thinking went to the success for those retreats is all about her, not about me. And I'm seeing that partly as avidya and partly as a me, as metta. Like the ego can go either I'm puffing myself up or I'm making myself small. Mm-hmm. Does it really matter if I know which one it is?
I see them usually as flip sides of the same coin, and they're manifesting as one or the other, but it's the same thing. And that will happen when you're in a strategy session, for instance. Again, I want to take it to the very practical. Strategy sessions are very practical. We're not making offers, and we're in the high-ticket virtual retreat season now, right? If we're not making offers, we don't have a business. So I just lost it. Give me a second here. Ask your question again, Marie. I had the thread of it, and then I lost it.
I was asking about the different energy between avidya, not knowing how big I am,
right,
and metta, ego, and making myself smaller than I am.
Right. So in the midst of a conversation, it might flip from one to the other, and you might find that with the person you're in a strategy session with, too. So, and I'm not so concerned about which side it is. I don't think, like, to analyze. It's kind of like going, well, we know there's the sky and there's the cloud. Where exactly is the edge of the cloud? Is it there or is there? But there we can tell that's cloud. There we can tell that sky. Good enough for me, right? Sometimes it's going to manifest as I feel small and unworthy. Other times I'm going to puff myself up, and it's going to flip and flop. And I'm, and raga and devesha, that pushing and pulling things toward me and pushing it away, are in that asmita, in that ego, right? Because I'm pushing. I'm pulling toward me a vision of myself and who I think I am, and then I'm pushing away that thought of myself that I think somebody else is telling me that I'm small, and all of that is exhausting and not necessary, right? But it's how most of business gets conducted, and sometimes at gross levels and sometimes at subtle levels of these fluctuations. So when we know these things and we have the person in front of us, for instance, and we say, hey, you know, what's from yesterday's call, it can happen in us, it can happen in them. And if I can't find it in me, I'm not going to be able to find it in that other person. I got to see it in me first. So so I say, hey, what made you decide to invest your time to come talk to me about your business and your life today? How do you think I can help you? And they say, well, I noticed that you do story. And maybe I'm the premier expert on the planet in story. And not only that, you know, I'm an Olympic athlete, and I do this, and my business is the best thing since sliced bread, and I'm amazing, right? I'm making up the content, but can you feel that? Right. Oh yeah. See you, Sergio. So, they are in the midst of a smita, probably. I need to show you that I am really something. And I don't need to get caught up in that. That's okay. That's all right. Because that could get me, well, you know, let me tell you about how great I am, right? And a smita meets a smita. Or it's like, wow, that's really great. I'm so happy for you. Sounds like I've had strategy sessions like this. Sounds like things are going really well for you. I'd keep doing what you're doing. That's my best suggestion for you. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for coming. And actually, one of the people in our community, the strategy session began not exactly in that way. It wasn't, I'm exaggerating, but it was in a way kind of like that. I wanted to tell you how things are going really, really well, right? And the strategy session, and I think it was moving from a first to second year, somebody that is not here right now, right? But somebody who's been in our community before. So. Do you want to move maybe into the second year? So there's a lot at stake in that call. And it was 8 minutes long to begin. I'm like, I'm so happy for you. I'm glad. It's going really, really well. Great. And it was then that person, because I'm not attached. And you wait, no, don't you see? Second year, it means so much. And no, that, I don't know. You think it's going well, then it's going well. I'm glad. I'm happy for you. And then that person said, no, wait, but there's a few things. Let me ask you some questions. Right? So that's where whether it's ego and puffing myself up, or I don't think I'm worthy, or flipping back and forth. What's more important to me is, can I recognize when I'm caught in one of the kleshas? If I'm caught, the yogis say, don't take it on faith. Try it out and see how it feels in your life. It's experiential. When I'm attached, it causes suffering. When I am in a smita, ego, it causes suffering. And when I can, the sooner I can notice it, the sooner I can break free from it. Did I touch on what you were talking about here, Marie?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of was thinking that was the case, but it just helps to have you go into it in a little more depth. Basically, it is. It's about recognizing when they're suffering, and it actually doesn't matter so much what the source is, mm-hmm. but just paying attention to the suffering.
When I know that these things, and they happen, and when you go out at the end of today into the world, you will start noticing these movements, and they can happen at very subtle levels. And we want to, first, they're really gross levels. Maybe next time you go networking, you're going to be hearing different things, for instance, right? How are you doing? Oh, I'm all right, but you know what? That conversation with my husband was just not so great. There's one of the kleshas in there, in the way that it was said, that person is suffering, right? And wanting, like clinging to an image of the husband that should be, or whatever, you know? There's suffering happening right in the moment. That person is caught in a klesha. And so then how do I want to negotiate that conversation, right? How can I help? How can I serve? And then I can be, then that can trigger that in me. I want them to stop talking about that because I want to have a pleasant conversation. If I'm caught in that klesha because I'm attached to the conversation going the way that I want it to, then I go, oh, your husband's not really so bad, right? Because I don't have one right now, but you know, I used to. Well, I have my husband that I think is really bad too, and I don't want that. So I'm attached to all that. And then I the conversation goes along that way and nothing goes to any level of depth. Because it's just klesha upon klesha upon klesha. When I can recognize it, and thanks, Marla, for the comment when you're listening to this later. Thank you. She wrote a beautiful, I need to leave. This is amazing. I'll listen to the rest. Thank you. That was lovely. So then it's klesha upon klesha upon klesha, and nobody's hearing anything really. It's just bouncing of suffering. And, you know, so then I say, well, really, he's probably not so bad. I bet he does some great things for you. I'm pushing that person away. I'm pushing away the suffering in my own life. And then they say, well, yeah, probably. But, you know, the other day, the conversation goes on in that way. Klesha, 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 klesha. And it happens in conversations. It happens in strategy sessions. It happens when we're planning our business. We might be caught in a klesha when we're envisioning our business. Where am I going to be 3 years from now? And I might be in small self when I might be in avidya, not knowing how big I am when I create that vision. Or I might create a vision of something starry-eyed and beautiful, but I don't even really believe that that could be me. I'm still caught in the klesha of avidya. And the vision isn't going to help me. So the klesha has caused suffering, and you'll see it all over the place. Avidya smita raga deveja binivesa. I don't know how big I am. I puff myself up with ego. I cling to things, I push other things away, and then I cling to fear of death, clinging to life. I'm afraid of change. And the high ticket virtual retreat asks you to change behaviors, doesn't it? Right? And like for those who've been around for a while, how many offers did you make in December? Right? How many offers did you make? Well, what if you made a few more? Right? And then for me too, I'm not above any of this. I'm learning this too. So these the material from yesterday and today connected. All right. Anything else about the kleshas before we go on to the yamas and niyamas? Anything else wanting to be said? Okay. So for the yamas and niyamas, remember that chapter 2 in the sutras, and I know a lot of this is just straight out teaching, but there's some things that are very practical for you when we can understand how these things work. So in the Yoga Sutras chapter 2 is like the practical stuff. Here's what you do. And it starts out by saying, yoga is this. I'm not even telling you that, but yoga is this thing. And then there's these things that get in the way. They're the kleshas. Then there's some stuff in between. Then it says, yeah, but now what should you do about it? And the answer in chapter 2 is the yamas and niyamas. There's more to it than that, but you can think of that as the basic structure. So how about we get to the answers? Well, then what are we supposed to do? We don't want to be caught in the kleshas. Well, then what should we do? Yogis, please tell us, right? I don't want to suffer. What can I do instead? So, and I am so excited because over the lunch hour, I found this article, Path to Happiness. I showed it to you earlier, 9 interpretations of the yamas and niyamas. And a lot of the stuff out there on the yamas and niyamas, it's not always... What is it? Okay, you got to tell me. What is it, Yvonne? Is it the picture? No? Something else? No, what did I miss?
Aaron just posted something.
Oh, the yamas and the yamas.
Yeah. And I hear the same thing. So it's
Yamas and niyamas. Oh my goodness, I've never heard that. That's so funny. It's like, you know what that reminds me of is my Spanish teacher in first year. He said, I can't get these two words separate. I keep getting them confused because they sound just the same. Kitchen and chicken. I'm like, I know, they don't sound the same at all to me. It's my native language, right? But I'm like, kitchen, chicken. Oh, they do sound the same. So he would say like, well, can you go to the chicken and get the kitchen that we're going to eat for dinner? No. Yamas and yamas. I've been saying it for so many years, right? That's so funny. All right. So I found this wonderful article. Some of the articles are a little bit weird and I don't like them so much, but this one's really good and I just found it over the lunch hour. So I have read it, but very quickly. But it also, they're quoting some teachers that I know do some really good stuff. One of them is Judith Lassiter. She's the teacher that I spent an entire week with just studying the first of the Yoga Sutras, an entire week on Now Begins the Practice of Yoga. She's a really awesome teacher and some others whose work I really respect. And so I thought we would do this. Let's have a little bit of fun with this. And let me see. Okay. Let's break you up into... I'm taking a long time over this. I'm trying to decide what's best. All right. So let's break you up into three groups. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do, because I want this to be really practical. I want this to be really real, and I want this to be really doable. So this tells you what each of the yamas are, tells you what each of the niyamas are. It starts with the first six, the yamas, and then it goes into the niyamas. And so what we'll do is we'll have one group actually read over, go to the Facebook page. Right? And there I've posted this article. Go find the article and read. It's going to be a page that you're going to read together. I'll give you a few minutes to do this. And then you can come back and tell us what that yama is. So for instance, group one, there's about, it starts on, when I print it out, it's the third page, and you'll see it. It's easy to see. There it says ahimsa, non-harming, right? So you'll see it. It's in blue. They're easy to find. The first one is ahimsa, non-harming. So group one, we'll do ahimsa. Group two, we'll do satya. Group three, we'll do brahmacharya, and so on, right? So what I want you to do, here's the task. Go read it. Understand what that ethical principle is. And sometimes they give some really real world examples. I like that. But I want you to think of one example of where that applies in your business. Why does it matter? Ahimsa, I can already give you one example. You're going to come up with another. Strategy sessions have closed sometimes because it came up for a reason in that conversation. Listen, I'm not going to make an offer if I think it's not going to work for you. Because that would be like, that would be causing harm to you, which would also cause harm to me. I'm a yogi. I live by the principle of ahimsa the best I can. Why would I want to cause harm to you? And it's just, it's really disarming because it's true. It's real. And I live by that the best I know how. So these things are very powerful. It's just one example. Strategy sessions have closed because I've been able to say in good conscience and for real, listen, I live that way. Why would I do that? That I guess other people, there's things that happen out there in business, but here's how we play over here. So let's first find, so what is that yama? And why does it matter? And one example so we can make it real. All right. So any questions about the assignment? You're going to do it in a group of two or three people. And then you'll come back and tell people about it. And then you'll do it. We'll do it real quick. Yeah, Erin.
I think we'll need to know which group we're in. So be on the.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll read out the groups to make sure you know who's supposed to be there. Anything else? All right. So here we go. Assign participants into three rooms. I think that's how we'll do it. So that's two or three people per room. And let me see, I'm going to I'm not sure if Judy's actually here right now. So Judy, because we can't see her, so I'm going to move her. I'm going to move you there. Okay. So breakout room one, that's Erin and Michelle and Sheila. Breakout room two is Sherry and Yvonne. Breakout room three is Grace, Judy, and Marie. So Erin's group is group one, Sherry's group is group two, and Grace's group is group three. So let's do it this way. Let's have group one take ahimsa. That's the first yama, ahimsa. Group two will take satya. That's the second one. Group three will take brahmacharya. Group one will also take the fourth one, aparigraha. And group two will take sausha. All right, so those are all the yamas. And group three only has brahmacharya. And that one is, it's a good one to put with you, Grace and Judy and Marie, you only have one, but it's a little trickier to understand how that one works in our lives. So I'm happy to leave you with just one. So I will break you up into a room in just a moment. I'll give you, I think what we're going to do is we're going to bump the niyamas to the next one. So we're just going to do this piece, then we'll go to break because I know this has already been a long stretch. So let's give you, can you do this in 5 minutes? What is that thing? Go find it. What is that thing? Why does it matter? And here's an example. 5 minutes as a group. Yeah, with the groups one and two, you're going to have to do two of them. So just work as quickly as you can. We'll help you when you get back if you didn't get to all of it, all right? Just do the best you can. You got two things to work with. You'll have to move pretty quickly to read that. I'll give you 6 minutes, all right? Here we go. I'm opening up the rooms. Have fun, and I'll see you in 6 minutes. All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. Wherever you got to, it's all perfect. I know that was just a few minutes, and I want us to make sure that we can wrap up soon so that we get a good break. And just like yesterday, we're running about, you know, half an hour later than I expected after the lunch hour. So good for me to note for next time. So, and also one of the groups I reassigned, I accidentally assigned one of the niyamas. I didn't mean to. So one group got reassigned at the last minute. So I dipped in there to let them know. So let's hear from group one. So that's that was Erin's team, right? I don't remember who exactly was all in all the groups I assigned them so quickly, but you know who you are, group one, group two, and group three. Group one, ahimsa. So, and what I'd like to do as we report on these, let's just take a minute. Maybe two, we've got five of them. We'll be here for another 5 or 10 minutes. We'll wrap it up and then we'll go for a good break, all right? I just want us to know why do these matter and how does that help stop those kleshas so we can do something else in our businesses and in our lives. And it happens on the yoga mat too. So I'm not going to go into that for right now because I want us to be able to immediately apply it over there in our businesses. So ahimsa, group one, what do you got to say about that? What is it and why does it matter? Just a minute, just really briefly. And anyone can be your spokesperson and then just notice how you're playing. So somebody from group one is going to leap in.
I'll leap Erin? In.
Okay, so ahimsa, it's that non-violence, non-harming. And then it's so important because it can show up everywhere, either in the thoughts or feelings that we have for others, including our thoughts and feelings that we have for ourselves. And it can start in a way that nonviolence and non-harming can start with me. That's anyway my why it's important for me. When I practice that, then I can be, noticing if I'm doing some of the harming to others.
Yes, beautiful. The example that comes to mind for me too is from how you spoke of it. Maybe I'm staying up all night for many, many nights, or I'm only getting 5 hours sleep, and it's violence toward myself. There's going to be something askew in my business when that is the foundation of my business. Are you working too hard, right? So yeah, beautiful. Many applications. There's some ahimsa. All right. Satya is next. That's group two, right? So group two, what is it and why does it matter? That's Yvonne and Sherry, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, truthfulness. So speak only, saying in the piece that speak only from off the highest and use your words to elevate the listener. So I think where that really would show up is, for instance, in strategy sessions.
Yeah, so you got that truthfulness, right? Mm-hmm. It's at that minute cellular level. It's not just a surface kind of truthfulness. Yeah, so strategy sessions, how, why?
You as a listener, to really be present, and also for the person who you're listening to make sure that they are heard, and not that you're being positive with them, that you're not, telling them all the things that they're doing wrong or that they should be doing, or that you are really kind in your feedback, but come from a loving kind of space instead of telling them what they did wrong.
It has to do with our words and how we use them, for mm-hmm. sure. Satya is let me see.
I don't know how to say it.
It's
a feeling for me. So
yeah, there's what you're getting at, a very deep level of Satya, because it's not just about truthfulness. Sometimes we can think, well, that's an ugly dress, right? So if I tell somebody that's an ugly dress, well, I said it and it's truthful. But Satya isn't. There's a deeper level of truth, of speaking truthfully, that can deeply matter in a strategy session. And so, is it kind? Like, Satya is not necessarily just kind. So right now, I'm doing my best to employ the yama of Satya, truthfulness. Because if I said, well, it's exactly kind, it's not necessarily connected with kindness, because it's about truthful. But it is connected with kindness in the sense I'm not just going to go, well, that's an ugly dress. But speaking a truth that is at a deeper level than the surface level, well, that's an ugly dress, and I can say whatever I want, and, right? Mm-hmm. How can we find that deep level of resonant truth? So this is a really good example of it as I'm speaking to Yvonne. Because mm-hmm. I want to use ahimsa, nonviolence, non-harming, but I also want to make sure that we really understand the word satya. So how do we negotiate that as we're speaking? It'd be easier for me to just agree, for instance, and say, well, yeah, it is that. And there is a level of it that you're hearing, a deep resonant level of it. And satya, actually, I'm going to take one more minute over that too, because you're getting to something that we might not have got of without this. I actually marked it off in my Yoga Sutra book, and I didn't think we'd have time for it, but I want to take the time really quickly, if I can find it quickly here. Give me just 1 second. So thank you for that. Satya. One second. Truth. Da, 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 da. All right. Cleanliness principles. I might not be able to find it quick enough. Give me 1 sec. Yeah, so here it is. This is chapter 2, sutra 36, all right? So pada 236 is about satya. So I want to spend this little extra minute here so we really get what this is. And the sutra actually goes this: when the sadaka, the practitioner, is firmly established in the practice of truth, his words become so potent that whatever he says comes to realization. That I will manifest things when I follow this principle. That's what the yogis teach us. It's a deeper level than just saying this thing or that thing. So you're trying to get at that really deep level of it. So I want to take it from deeper here. Most of us think we tell the truth, but truth is causal, not integrated and cellular. It's the integrated and cellular part that I think Yvonne's got such a deep hold of, right? For instance, if we say, I'll never eat chocolates again, as long as one cell of our body holds back and disagrees with the others, our success is not assured. If the stated intention is totally, Yvonne's getting at the wholehearted part of the truthfulness here. If the stated intention is totally wholehearted, not one cell dissembling, then we create the reality we desire. It's not our mind, but the inner voice of our cells, which has the power to implement our intentions. It is a deep and abiding and cellular truthfulness. And I am employing to the best of my ability, both ahimsa, nonviolence, non-harming, and satcha, truthfulness. They have to both happen at the same time as I'm speaking here to and with Yvonne and to everyone. Can you hear it? I'm doing my best. It may not be completely skillful in how I'm doing it. Nonviolence, non-harming. There's something that you've got in the deep level of satcha that I want people to hear, but I don't want people to miss. It's about truthfulness. And sometimes it's hard to be truthful as I am trying to be here. Make sense? Yeah. Yeah, but thank you for hearing that. When you talked about the kindness piece, I think often it's missed. We think it's just a surface level truth, and it's not. When we are really speaking the truth, we're going to be much more mindful than just saying, hey, you know, it's an ugly dress, or it's not right, or it's we've spoken wrong, or something like that. So Yvonne, how are you? All right with that one?
Yeah. Well, because truthfulness. You can bring truthfulness at so many different levels.
Yeah.
Right. And you can share it in so many different ways that, you know, either people hear or they don't.
And see, the way that I was gently negotiating with my words and trying to find that balance between ahimsa and satya, I do that in strategy sessions as well, because sometimes there's an easier path to go along. But I'll stay with satcha. Here it is. I hear it a little bit more like this, and I got to be truthful about that at a deep resonant level, and abide by ahimsa as well. So these two fit together. So thank you for taking us. I was not going to take the time to go to that deep a level, but your comments allowed us to do that. Yeah, did y'all hear? If you heard what I was saying about ahimsa and satcha and how they work together, raise your hand. No, it's been a long block. You heard? Okay, fantastic. That's wonderful. Imminently practical for strategy sessions and foundational. They can't happen without that, as far as I know. All right. Number three, where were we? Ahimsa Satya Ashteya. Oh, that was, you guys have two in a row because I mixed them up. So Sherry and Yvonne, once again, Ashteya. And I only gave you a short time for that.
So with Ashteya, it talks about non-stealing, and it talks in terms of different perspectives of it. It talks in terms of, you know, not stealing people's time their energy or their happiness, as well as, you know, having a fair trade in doing whatever's you're doing. And, you know, the concept of if you take and you don't give back, you can create a major imbalance. And for me, as I was looking at that, it called for me the concept of giving and receiving, that there has to be a balance between giving and receiving. There has to be a receiver as well as a giver. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's that just even a thank you in that giving and receiving. So,
yeah. And so then that's going to connect with one of our other yamas as well. But this Ashteya, so you hear the one key word, the non-stealing. And Sherry, I'm so glad that you brought up, and they gave some good examples, that you could steal someone's time. You can steal someone's energy. You can steal someone's happiness. I'm so glad you mentioned those three, because we think of it, okay, well, I haven't stolen anybody's money, or, you know, so my business is clean and clear. We think of it in such simple terms in the business world sometimes, right? But they're talking about, the yogis are talking about a deeper resonant level of how we conduct our affairs. And if I consistently show up half an hour late for meetings, I've stolen someone's time. I'm in danger of crossing the Ashtaya when I keep you late all the time, right? Am I stealing your time? I want to be respectful of your time. All the ways that we conduct our business, really, it really matters. Not to steal someone's time, not to steal it. We can steal at levels that we don't even know we're doing it. And then because other people have suffered from the lack of these out there in the business world, sometimes it's like, well, when I'm offering this, they might be afraid that they're going to get stolen from because it's happened. So when we scrupulously follow these ethical guidelines, because if we don't, we suffer, then it creates a groundwork that allows for people to take a huge leap because it creates trust. When we're at this deep resonant level of paying attention to the nuance of these yamas, are you hearing the importance of this? I've not taught this like this before ever, but I live by this the best I know how. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Beautiful, beautifully put. And this piece about generosity and so on, these are also, that's part of another one of the yamas. And I agree that because as a result of this non-stealing, it will make me take other actions as well that are deeply resonant. But see, I'm using both satya and ahimsa, nonviolence, non-harming, and truthfulness, because I want to have clarity here that the giving and receiving is not what Ashtaya is, but it's about non-stealing. But it's going to have that ripple effect. If I'm not stealing, I'm thinking about how I'm conducting the way that my things circulate in my life, right? So satya is making me clarify that. Ahimsa is having there be a gentleness in and about it as I do that so that there's clarity in the concept so we can actually use them, right? So y'all are getting that, right? Like I'm doing my best to follow these as I'm teaching them, right? Okay, ahimsa, satya, ashtaya, brahmacharya. So brahmacharya is a kind of, I only gave you one of them because it's, you know, what? Why do we need this, right? So yeah, group three.
So Judy and I had this, and we both originally, when we read it, had a slightly divergent take. And this is a challenging concept to, I find it very challenging. So it's about moderating your energy. And I think mindfully using whatever personal energy you have, which is limited, right? It's not something. So it's not something that is without, it's unending. And it's being very mindfully aware of how that energy is used and not allowing our senses to overtake us and yes. Overextend energy.
Yes. And I want to insert something that the traditional explanation of it was celibacy. Some translate it as celibacy. Like don't misuse your sexual energy, right? But it's the actual meaning of it is much more nuanced than that. And that's why I told you about that one community where he told the community to be celibate because he was following that guideline of brahmacharya for the community. Y'all are supposed to be celibate. But then he was sleeping with students, right? So brahmacharya, it's, you know, containment of energy. Yeah, bye-bye. So yeah, beautiful. And one example of that, what would be an example then? Where would we be like throwing out our energy or containing our energy?
I think for me, where I would sit in the business is being able to keep a distance between, let's say, a client that's becoming highly emotional and not allowing myself to get wrapped up into the emotion, whether it's staying within my own integrity or if I'm, you know, somewhere and, or, I don't know, I just came to mind, like driver's upset or angry and just sort of letting it go, right? Just not allowing whatever this driver does to upset me. Mm-hmm. So conserving my energy. I don't know, Judy, I don't know whether you have other ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I totally agree with you. And I'm thinking also of like not feeling attacked or not feeling hijacked by, you know, somebody else's projected opinion, you know, of me or
which I think goes with what we talked earlier today mm-hmm. about, or maybe that was yesterday, but being able to let go. If somebody says, oh, it's too expensive, it's our price is too much. It's sort of being able to let go and not allow that to impact us. So to not respond to that.
Just beautiful examples. Yeah. So what is the flow of energy? And am I just wantonly like using my energy? And originally it was like sexual energy, but we can think of it as the flow of energies, right? Am I just, right? Or am I, is there some kind of containment? And I often say we leak energy all the time. There's a hint of brahmacharya in what I'm teaching when I say that. How can we like not be leaking our energy so we have it for the purpose of our businesses and our lives? It's beautiful. Yeah. There's a depth in these yamas that is really beautiful. Yes. Okay. I know that we're way over here. So we're going to go to the last one, aparigraha. We'll do this real quick and then we'll make sure we've got a good break. So aparigraha. And that was back to group one, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's aparigraha?
Aparigraha, non-grasping. Instead of holding on to things, ideas, physical things. I think that captures a lot of things. Let them go. And there's a piece of stewardship to it that resonated with me. And it's about taking care of things as well. So the things that you have and you know that you're using them and they're important for you, take good care of those. Or if you're consuming, take care not to consume more than what you need. And that, is this it or another one, that you can give back as well? No, I think that's a different one. Was that brahmacharya?
Brahmacharya, and sometimes I think about the traditional translations, and then I remember it's not that, it's actually much broader than that. But when I remember brahmacharya was traditionally celibacy, I can remember, right. Oh, that's about energy, yeah. Right? So, yeah. And, yeah.
So, yeah, I think what I was getting at is don't take more than what you give back. Like there's a balance piece to this one too. Mm-hmm. And it's important because, no, that's stealing. Anyway, it's important because we can accumulate a lot of things, but it doesn't make room for what could be coming our way. So if our house is full of junk, let go of some things and maybe some new, more wonderful things will come in. And Dr. Michelle made a great point where she was saying that an idea would be, don't get so attached to a certain way of doing things. There could be a different way of doing it. And it could be an even better way, but you've got to give that a shot first. You've got to let go of your idea first in order to make that new and potentially better idea work for you and potentially better for your business. And
yeah, so
fear of change. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so aparigraha, it can be it's the antidote to raga. If raga is like I'm hanging on to my stuff over there in the kleshas, the things that bind us, aparigraha, it's a non-grasping. So the traditional translations of these, ahimsa, non-violence, non-harming. There are better definitions, but when I remember the traditional definitions, it helps me remember and distinguish among them so I can use them in my life and my business. Ahimsa, non-violence, non-harming. Satya, truthfulness. Ashteya, non-stealing. Brahmacharya, celibacy. It's not really that. You don't have to be celibate to be a yogi, right? But like that, then we remember it's about the flow of energy. And then aparigraha, non-greed. Right, so there's non-stealing and there's non-greed. Remember, I told you that they'll be related, but not the same. And when I can realize I can steal somebody's time, or I can be greedy by hanging on to an idea and clinging to it, then I can notice minute levels of suffering inside me that I can let go of by following the yamas. By understanding what they mean at their minute level, and then in the flow of a strategy session, people say, Michelle, how come you know those things about me that, you know, other people don't know? Why isn't you listen? And I know you heard me. There's other things too, but these principles to live by are a part of why that's happening. Because I'm listening for that minute level of, is there something I'm hanging on to? Is there something I'm clinging to here in what I want them to want? That happened, for instance, in your strategy session, Grace, for instance, right? Without talking about, you know, what I want you to want might not be what you want. Remember, we were talking about, do you want this or do you want that? Do you remember that? And you came back day two and you wanted this, not that. I was thinking you want probably this and not that. You wanted the other one. in a moment, I have to be able to be there and align with that thing that you want because you want it. If I am caught in a parigraha, I can't follow you over there. You would not be here if I did not understand and do my best to implement these. It's a very tangible example. I don't think Grace would be here if I didn't have that practice. You understand what I'm saying, right, Grace? You know which piece I'm talking about. Yeah. So all of these are eminently practical. They're real life conversations and perfectly placed right after the high ticket virtual retreat. Things you can play with. Don't get too serious about them. Let them be playful. Explore them. Notice them. You'll see them in the world outside you. This block went super hyper long. I thought I would keep it in time, but we didn't. I'm learning how to do this. I've not taught this before, but we are going to take a good break. We'll shorten up the last block. It's been a very full day and a very full couple of days. So this is usually, I said I'd end by six. We'd end by six, and I really want to give you that half hour break. There's been so much going on. I want to give you some time to process. I want to give you some time to go inside. So let me see. Can I give you that half hour break? And in that break, can I ask you to take 5 minutes though? Take 5 minutes of that half hour break, because we'll do a really quick, let me see. Do I want to do this? No, I'm going to let go. I'm going to let go of the niyamas. The niyamas are important too, but you can do that work on your own. And because I'd rather take you to a different place. So you've got the article, you can play with it. You've got the ideas with the yamas. And I am right now implementing non-greed and non-grasping, and I'm letting that go as I'm teaching, right? So, and also because of ahimsa, non-violence, non-harming, I'm going to try to jam too much in, and that will cause harm to people. They won't be able to take it in. And I'm speaking the truth to you right now that I'm shifting, right? So I'm using at least three of these right now. So they're very highly practical, and they're in my life all the time. I might not think of it consciously, but I've learned it, I've practiced it, I've studied it. I practice it on the yoga mat too. We haven't even talked about that piece of it. So, and that word stewardship that came up with a parigraha, just want to say the founder of the Shift Network that I'm doing that strategy session with coming up, that I paid $1,500 for to do spend an hour with him. I listened to an hour long talk with him. He created an 8-figure business. And one of the things he was just talking about is stewardship. We've got to shift our idea of what business is. He's created something beautiful and giant and holistic and wonderful in the Shift Network. It's an 8-figure business. And he has a huge yoga background, and he's brought all of these principles to bear to bring that, to bring that amazing Shift Network out into the world. It's ethical entrepreneurism to create a better world, something I know that all of you would, you know, probably resonate with beautifully. And he was using words that come right out of this. I know he has that background as well, whether it's yoga or a related discipline. He's deeply in those kinds of holistic practices. So these ideas are cutting edge in entrepreneurship right now, and they come from very ancient wisdom. So I won't ask you to do anything over the break other than take care of yourself. We'll take a half hour break. We're going to break in just 1 or 2 minutes because I want to tell you what we're going to do in the last segment. So the last segment is restorative yoga and pranayama, and it's there for a reason. We've done a lot. How do we consolidate it? Right? If you think of the consolidation that happens in Shavasana, the breath work and the restorative work are akin to that. And the breath work is considered that even higher, more refined level than even what we experience in Shavasana. So if Grace's arms were disappearing into the floor in Shavasana, then what could happen? And I'll just give you a taste of this so you know something of what that practice is. And its importance when we say that I'm nervous or I'm upset or then I can't catch my breath, right? And I breathe funny when I'm nervous or upset. If I'm going into a talk and I'm nervous and upset, when I can learn to work with the breath, it creates different results in my world. So I wanted to give you a why for coming back. I know that it's a long day. So we'll take a half an hour. We'll come back to some things that will consolidate for you, that will bring the energy together for you. That's brahmacharya. I don't want our energy all scattered and out there. I want to bring it together again. Consolidation, right? So take a half hour. That means we'll come back at 5:25 mountain time. And that gives us, this last block will be a much shorter block. It'll just be 35 minutes. After that, I'll take any questions you have around the yoga, around the High Ticket Virtual Retreat. We have done a mountain of things in 2 days. If you have not received something that has the power to shift your world, we've not been on the same planet here. There's been so much that we've brought to the table. So have a wonderful restorative break. Please don't go there and, you know, follow, please do follow Brahmacharya. Don't let your energy splay out there. I can use that language now, right? Like, oh man, I got to check my email and I've lost it all. So keep it contained and keep it, and also non-violence, non-harming, ahimsa. Don't be violent to yourself. Take good care of yourself over this half hour, and so that we can get the benefits of what we're doing here. And I will, whatever it is, take care of yourself, and I will see you back here at 5:25 my time. All right? Thank you so much for this. Well done. See you soon.